We are live.
Are in fact live.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the inaugural episode of Snow Day Sports, featuring your host, Dalton Barrett and Maxwell Slindon.
Dalton, the biggest news in Minnesota right now. Western Conference Finals, Game One, Tuesday night, Minnesota Timberwolves, Oklahoma City Thunder. What are you looking forward to in that one?
Man, dude, I'm fired up for this. I'm trying not to get my hopes too high just because it's the Timberwolves. And frankly, most of my lifetime, they've kind of been trash, not gonna lie.
You can lay into them a little bit. They've been bad. But you know what? They're on the rise. Western Conference Finals last year. We know how that ended up, but
Hey,
stand
but
for redemption.
we don't have to deal with Luka and the refs this year, okay?
Yeah, I think.
I mean, there is. Some people saying, that Shai Gilgeous-Alexander has a little bit of a flopping tendency like Luka, but hey, we're here to play ball.
It will be interested to see being on the other side of a seven-game semifinal with Denver now, us having 6 days off until the next game. Last played the 14th in game five, and now they just got done Sunday in a war, basically, with Denver. And you could see how that affected Minnesota last year in the finals. Even Ann has admittedly said he's been tired, so he'll be interested in the Oklahoma City Thunder are tired. Because it's a very similar series. They're going to have home court advantage after a seven-game series against the Denver Nuggets. So hopefully the Wolves can be on the receiving end of this luck this year.
I'm hoping that, but we saw what happened in the semi or in the conference semis with the Wolves won that first series in five. In that first game in that series, they came out and they just looked bad. I mean, I'm a big Chris Finch guy because he kind of lays into his players. I like that a lot about him. And Ant straight up said in the post game interview, "We played like trash."
No,
And
they absolutely did. That was off a game. They probably shouldn't have won. They missed.
And what were our 3-point stats that game? I mean, that was freaking atrocious.
Yeah, no, the Lakers game, we missed 43s that clinching game against the Lakers, and they went missed their first 15 threes against the Warriors, and it was just kind of over from there. It was never really a competitive game. It's that one was over early, and then even without Curry playing most of that game, they never seemed like they were going to lose at all.
Well, yeah, because Curry got hurt in the both the first end of the first freaking quarter of that game.
Yeah, first, second quarter, it was definitely early in like a lot of normal games that could be a turning point, but it was just too little, too late for the Wolves that game. But you know what? They regrouped. It helped not to have Curry play the rest of that series, and they won four games, the next four games, and are playing more basketball.
I'm really looking forward to this series. For I mean, I know a big reason I'm looking forward to it, I guess, is Chet Holmgren's return home. Back to Minneapolis. He's a Minnesota kid, played at Minnehaha Academy. In high school, I wasn't too big of a fan of him just because he's like a 7-foot point guard, and he just kind of did whatever he wanted. But it'll be interesting to see the battle between him and Rudy inside. I have that down in my notes here as a matchup to look at. And, I think Chet, he's more athletic, but Rudy just freaking gets in there and he gets in your face. He's going to get after you. That'll be an interesting matchup to see.
You said it perfectly. Two very different styles of center. Rudy, obviously, you're more traditional interior player, like prototypical rim protector, elite rim protector, and like makes a lot of his money down low underneath the basket, both offensively and defensively. And Chet wasn't the number one prospect in the nation out of high school because he only played inside. He can do anything. He was that 7 foot point guard, and like we'll be interested to see if he. How they guard each other, and if they even will guard each other, because I don't see Rudy doing a great job on the perimeter against Chet, and I don't see Chet doing very good on the inside against Rudy. So that will be a matchup to look out for because it's two very different playing styles out of the two centers.
And I also wanted to know another thing, the rise of Julius Randle of recently. Holy cow. Like, there's not very many cases when in trades in professional sports where you can say both teams won. This is one of those cases with Cat and Julius Randle. They have been just as good as advertised. It's blown my mind how well he's played down the stretch here. And I mean, I feel like we can say that he was the MVP of that last series against the Warriors. I mean, when things were down, he got us rolling again. I mean, Julius Randle right now. Wow.
Yeah, there's definitely been a few games this playoffs where it's like, well, at least Julius Randle's playing well, and like he's been kind of the only reason they've been somewhat competitive. And there's a reason both the Knicks and the Timberwolves are playing basketball for still playing basketball, one of the last four teams. It's because were able to make a very good trade for both sides, and like not to mention Julius Randle, who's played obviously very well in the series, but Dante DiVincenzo, a great piece off the bench for the Wolves. That they got back as well. It's worked out, and I'm sure Tim Connelly is very impressed with the results that his trades have made now. Not only that, and as we mentioned earlier, Rudy, he's done a very great job of producing, wheeling and dealing to get the Timberwolves where they are right now and to have the success they've had recently.
Which part of that success might be partially on the inconsistency of this one specific player. That being Anthony Edwards. And statistically, he looks solid, on paper, but I'm telling you, those first halves, a couple of games, talk about rough. I mean, he's driving, he's missing shots that, a normal Anthony Edwards would make, nine times out of 10. And it's just consistent. He's consistently being inconsistent right now in the first half. And I feel like that's what's kind of holding the Wolves back in the from maybe blowing teams out is his lack of consistency in the first half of those games.
But with that lack of that lack of consistency that Edwards has is like, it's just all of a sudden it's a switch and every shot's going in. He can take the Steph Curry threes and those will go in, and then he'll go 5 for 5. I think he's shown he needs to make one, and then if he makes one, he'll make the next five or so. And like, all of a sudden the Wolves are just, that's where Wolves runs come from, is Anthony Edwards. All of a sudden he's just making all those shots in a row, and like, and then we're getting a couple stops, and Ant's hitting another three, and all of a sudden we're back in it, or we're taking a big lead. And now the game just switches because Anthony Edwards was able to get hot. And that's the reason his stats have looked not terrible, I guess. Like, he's put up decent stats in that Warriors series, but it was during those times where he would have those solo runs by himself and is able to put the team on his back for those 5, 10 minute stretches where where we saw him in the first half maybe was not as consistent as what we would be hoping for out of Ant.
Well, I think this is going to sound weird, but he complements a lot of players really well, too. Because you look when he starts to get hot, all of a sudden Naz Reid's playing. Naz Reid gets hot. Jaden McDaniels is hot, especially on the defensive end as of lately. Him and Julius Randle on the defensive end have been outstanding. Even Dante DiVincenzo, and he comes in off the bench, and he is freaking wheeling and dealing. And this is a lot of fun to watch as a Timberwolves saying, I'm trying not to get my hopes up, like I said, but when you see things that are rolling like this, you can't help but get excited.
And like, how much of a luxury that deep bench that we have is like everybody says, like the eight starters, because you got Naz Reid, former sixth man, coming off the bench, Dante DiVincenzo coming off the bench, Neil Alexander Walker. I'm sure a lot of those guys would trade for him in a heartbeat to put him in that starting lineup, and you can go eight deep off of a bench. It just is such an advantage because not a lot of teams can match that depth. And like, if you can trust those guys to do what they are capable of doing and what we've seen them do, you're gonna have a lot of teams are gonna have trouble beating that, and is one of the main factors into this of the success of the Timberwolves this season.
That is one thing. I mean, the Thunder have that the T-Wolves haven't seen it yet this year is depth. The Thunder have a lot of depth, just like the T-Wolves. So it's gonna be a heavyweight battle. I feel like it's gonna be blow for blow. I think the hottest team at the end of the game end up winning this because it's going to be, they're going to be neck and neck, and whoever can get hot last might just freaking might. I mean, win game one, obviously, but might end up taking the series. But the Thunder defensively, especially in game seven, was it yesterday? Really shut Joker down. I was really impressed by that. And I mean, I know Timberwolves are a little more multidimensional than the Nuggets, obviously, but Joker, he's arguably the best player in the world.
Yeah, just not a lot of people are going to argue against that. And they held that team to under 100 points in a game seven, which is really impressive, especially in today's NBA. And another thing I want to look for out of the Thunder that the Wolves have not seen yet this playoffs is youth.
Yes.
You got those old Laker teams where LeBron is still probably might be 100, who knows, but he's old. Curry's been 37, Draymond's old. Jimmy Butler's been in the league forever. And it's all this age, and Luka's not that exactly young and doesn't have the effort of some of the younger guys in the NBA. But like the Thunder are like the youngest team in the NBA, one of, and that's going to be a very different style than the Timberwolves have been used to, especially when they've played the amount of minutes the Lakers did play, and like they wore them down. You could see them get worn down, and like they can't, it's going to be a lot harder to wear down this Thunder team. Hopefully the Nuggets did a lot of that for us, and it was a war. That was a war. That was a 7-game war. Like we saw it last year when the Timberwolves got into it, and three of those games are in Denver, and they're hard to catch up. Fortunately, game seven for the Thunder was in Oklahoma City, and they don't have to travel for game one either, and they'll keep it homegrown, and they'll have their fans to bring the energy, and we'll see if they have any energy left for game one for the Timberwolves.
One interesting thing I want to note as well is this could be a factor, could not be, but both teams not having to switch time zones for this series. Both being in the central time zone as with the last two series for the Timberwolves, they were having to go to the West Coast. And I mean, that could be a small factor in this series with not having to switch time zones and get used to or being jet lagged and stuff like that. So that could be a small detail, but. I mean, I'm overall looking forward to a great series here. I mean, it's going to be a heavyweight battle. I truly believe the winner of this series goes on and wins the title. I mean, for the Timberwolves being a sixth seed right now, I mean, everybody knew they were better than a sixth seed, but I mean, it's almost like they're peaking at the right time right now. And so I'm looking forward to this.
No, they are absolutely peaking at the right time. They're, I think, 23-6 was the stat I saw in their last 29 games, which is obviously really impressive. And if they have six losses, they only need eight to go 8-6 the rest of the way, and they are NBA champions. And I think it speaks to the depth of that Western Conference too, where they are a sixth seed, and they were as hot as they were. Obviously, they probably got off to a slower start than they were hoping and anticipating, and that kind of put them in a tougher spot. But to claw back, get out of that play-in, to get to that sixth seed, and now we're in the Western Conference Final, where preseason expectations were at least were. And Chris Finch said, "Are we a team? Are we a Western Conference Final team? Are we a team that went to the Western Conference Final?" And that was his challenge throughout the entire season. And now they get to prove, yeah, we are a Western Conference team. We can be a mainstay here, and hopefully they can win one of these, because Minnesota has not been to a finals of any of the Big Four sports since October of 1991, which is the longest streak of any major Big Four city slash state.
And I can tell you, as an Minnesota sports fan, if you would have told me 10 years ago when we were freaking going to T-Wolves games for dirt cheap and sitting in good seats that, hey, 10 years from now, we're going to be in back-to-back Western Conference finals, I would have laughed right in your face and I would have been all over you. But the Anthony Edwards effect and the Chris Finch and I mean, all these tools that we brought in to make us competitive again. And now we're, I mean, like you said, like Chris Finch said, were you a Western Conference Finals team or did you just happen to be there? Well, now proving that we are an elite team right now. And I think they're hungry. I mean, obviously, I'm hungry as a fan because in my lifetime, I've never experienced a championship in Minnesota. So,
No, and I think the fans want it. The fans will bring their energies for 3, 4, and 6 if necessary, and it will both fans are hungry for a winner, because Oklahoma City hasn't had that much success since they had that Durant Westbrook Harden era's team, and they want to get back there, and both fans want to be back there, and it's going to be loud environments and the Gladiator. It's going to be a war, and may the best team win.
I agree. Well, should we jump ships here and jump across the parking ramp in downtown Minneapolis from Target Center to Target Field and talk about them Twins, huh?
Yeah, no, they've the hottest team in baseball still, and the only thing that could put them out was water, and they're in a current rain delay right now, and the only thing that can cool them down.
But yeah, man, this last stretch for the Twins has been extremely fun to watch. I know it's tough right now with all these holdouts with Fox and everything, but I try watching as much as I can, and with all the circumstances they've gone through recently, which we'll get to in a minute here. I mean, it's been extremely fun to watch, and man, Rocco is, I don't know what Rocco did. I don't know if he freaking shot him with gave him all a shot of B12 or, but. And he's got the boys rolling right now.
Yeah, no, they had a similar trajectory last season. They started off slow, rattled off a 2-week winning streak, and we're gonna hope this year doesn't end with a big end of season collapse to miss the playoffs. And I don't think this season will. They've got a really good core of hitters and a really good bullpen and really good starting pitching, and that's a great success for baseball and seems to be what teams need and want for when it comes to the postseason, and the Twins definitely have that. Now, is it getting them to play is a totally different question. Because now Buxton's out for at least a week, Correa's out for at least a week, and on top, Kiechel's now out for another month at least, and
Right,
we'll
that
see
injury.
how they patch through those injuries.
Yeah, the injury bug has definitely been unfortunate for the Twins right now. But another thing, something I had in my notes was young players stepping up, though. It's been extremely fun to watch, and I find it super cool that the Twins have, their Triple-A team just a few miles down the road. Or, down in St. Paul, every time I go back to school, I drive right by CHS Field there, and it looks like an awesome park to play at, and it seems to be effective for the Twins being able to, hey, we need a guy, give us this guy if he's ready or not. So it seems to be working right now with getting these young guys, and although they might not be fully developed, I mean, they're coming in here, they're playing their butts off. Something I'd like to see.
Yeah, no, exactly. And they just called up that Carson McCusker to fill up the void. If nobody's seen him, he's about 6'8", and he looks all of that on the baseball field. I actually saw him this Friday in Des Moines. They were playing the Iowa Cubs. Played that game and then got the call to go to Milwaukee to help the team out. He can rake. He can hit the ball. He's got the juice. He was hitting about 350 in AAA.
Oh.
Oh, yeah, he's got a great bat on him for sure.
Another thing I like to notice, even with the Twins' success, Royce Lewis isn't hitting the cover off the ball either. So it's a group effort right now. Royce Lewis, he's been the Twins' top prospect for how many years? Number one overall pick coming out of high school, and when he's healthy, it seems to be he's very productive. But even with him not being as productive right now, the whole team seems to be backing him up. And I mean, we were hitting the cover off the ball here recently, and Ryan Jeffers is someone who's really impressed me as of recently. He's really coming to his own and proved himself to be a big league worthy catcher. And another guy that really impressed me lately too is Trevor Larnach. I remember watching him in college at Oregon State. I mean, dude hit nukes. Like, I think it was his senior year on the Twins draft. He was playing over at Siebert Field here, Minneapolis, in the regional or the super regional, and his freaking swing, oh my God.
Well, yeah, he was on one of those really good Oregon State teams. It was him, Stephen Kwan of the Guardians, who we'll bring up here shortly, and then Adley Rutschman at behind the dish. You're going to have a pretty good college baseball team, and they were a very good college baseball team that year. It was very unfortunate the Gophers ran into them in a super regional.
Yeah, and you look at the freaking team the Gophers had that year too. Guys like Taron Vavra, who's currently tearing it up in the minors. We had Max Meyer, who's a first round pick that, or I think it
Top
was.
five. He was a number three overall pick.
Yeah, what was he, the number three overall pick the next year? Like
Yeah, no, he was.
Gophers were no slouches that year.
No.
I remember we went and watched a couple of games that year down at Siebert Field, and
They were a good team.
that was a damn good ball club.
Yeah, no,
And
for sure.
had
They was.
Anderson had him rolling that year.
Oh, for sure. And it was. And yeah, no, they were a dang good ball club. Shame they haven't been able to replicate that success yet, but hopefully the Twins can pick up some of that slack, especially the big series. Got a three-game slate against the Guardians here soon, and it's going to be interesting to see who can take that position for second place and stay within the striking distance of the Tigers. As you could see during the Twins last 2 weeks, it was we've been out of it, and we just kept winning and kept inching closer, and yeah, now you're within the White Sox, who's going to be last. Now we're fighting for the Guardians, who's going to be second, and the Royals are right there too. And Twins are at 5 games back. Royals and Guardians are both at 5.5, so it's anybody's race. And all three of those are still slotted to be the wild card. And no, it's got a tough AL Central and a big series here against a Guardians team who has been giving Twins fits. It's never been like, oh yeah, the Guardians have just been blowing the Twins out. It's Guardians can score two when the Twins only score one, or three when the Twins score two, and it gets irritating after a while losing some of these close games. And eventually, if you want to be the team you think you are, you got to start being on the positive side of those wins.
Yeah, I mean, that just speaks to how deep the AL Central is this year. I mean, when you look at their top three, four teams in our freaking division right now, those are top 10 teams in the league. Like, I mean, it's kind of like the NFC North with last year. I mean, hopefully we have some more playoff success than that, obviously, but
Right. Yeah, no, it's.
we'll get to NFL in a minute here, but.
Yeah. But no, it does help to have the White Sox in a division, but still. But it's not like we've all played 20 games against them this year. No, they've beaten some quality teams and like Twins. Yeah, the Twins are one Jackson Chourio robbery away from probably being 14 games on a win streak here. And Royce Lewis is like, yeah, he came out struggling, but know what? He's turning it around right now. He had one home run yesterday. He was about a foot away from having another one. And no, he's hopefully he's gonna find his groove, especially when it's definitely his lineup right now. And like he's gotta be the catalyst of that lineup, and he's gotta be the spark plug and the reason the Twins are gonna score runs is because of his success.
Well, yeah, so I just got an update from the Twins here, which they have suspended the game with the Guardians till tomorrow, or yeah, tomorrow they're going to resume at 6:10 p.m. They are going to the bottom half of the fourth. The Twins are up 2-1 currently.
Yeah. And
Which, I mean, Bailey Ober, it looks like he was cruising right now, so, and I don't think he'll be able to go tomorrow, but it might be kind of a bullpen game tomorrow.
yeah, no, it'll be interesting how Rocco handles that. Because we do get a 27th man, so I'll be interested to see who they take from the Saints. Is it another pitcher? Is it David Festa? Is it Simone Woods Richardson? Or if they just have a bullpen, bring up a bullpen arm and just piece it together and hope Chris Paddock goes deep into the game too, and we won't have to use too much of a bullpen.
Which, speaking of Twins pitching staff in their bullpen recently, what was it, 34 innings in a row without giving up
Yeah,
this?
33, 34. Yeah, that's pretty
But
impressive to do, and it's a testament to not only that starting pitching, Pablo
that
Lopez, one of the best in the league, Joe
bullpen.
Ryan, one of the best in the league, Bailey Ober, Chris Paddock both have had really good months and like turning it around. And Chris Paddock especially was a big contributing part of that 34 inning streak, and how they like you'll be hard pressed to find a four man rotation like that better than that in the major leagues.
Yeah, and then I mean, one of the arms that has really stuck out to me recently is guy with a name by Johan Duran, or is that, I'm not even sure if that's correct,
Yeah,
but yeah,
Durant, he
Duran.
throws smoke,
I mean,
so I don't know. He's
I
he
mean,
was
he's a flamethrower. He's your typical, come down, coming in the bottom of the ninth, just shut a team down by throwing, 102, 103. And I mean, I've been a big fan of his since he got the call a few years ago, and that's something he's a pitcher the Twins haven't had in a long time, especially coming out of the bullpen. I mean, that's going back to the days of Joe Nathan. I mean, so you look at, Glenn Perkins was a couple-time All-Star, but he wasn't gassing it up. He was sitting 92, 93 off the mounds. I mean, he wasn't throwing it by anybody. He was a crap out of a gun. But I mean, Durant,
Oh,
I mean, he's been fun to watch.
no, for sure. And it's like, not only is he being fun to watch, he's been very effective. And that may be like problems years past. He wasn't always like that. He was obviously a really good pitcher, but he wasn't like that. He would definitely wasn't, I wouldn't put him in that elite class of relievers. Like, he was nasty and he had elite stuff. It just didn't always translate to the shutdown. But this year, he's just been shut down. You throw him out there, game over. It's he's gonna blow you away.
Another very underrated player I just pulled up on my phone here, Louis Varland.
Yeah. No, yeah, no, he's
I mean,
that.
currently 2.95 ERA. He's only got 2-3 record, but he's gonna come out there and I mean, he's gonna give you some quality innings.
Yeah, no, and no, they've even transitioned him to get him a few bullpen outings, maybe, and that seems to have done really well. He even invented the velo slap. I don't know if you've ever seen it. Throws his last warm-up pitch. Pitching coach, bullpen coach rubs his hands together right on the back. It says it gives him a couple miles an hour boost for who knows, but anything will help, and they'll do anything to get there. And he's been really good out of that pen, and they've even turned him into a starter, and is it's turned out very well, and I'm sure Rocco is very pleased with the results, and he's even got some high leveraged innings out of him, and I don't know if he expected that, and he just adds more depth to a really good rotation, picking up some of the slack Griffin Jacks kind of created, not being his usual really effective self, and hopefully he gets back to that form to make the Twins even more formidable opponent.
Yeah, then what's the name here? Is it good old Pablo Lopez? And he's someone who's very quietly having a great season for the Twins. He's 4-2 right now. Got an ERA at 2.40. Is not your strikeout guy. He's not going to go out there and get, 8, 9 strikeouts in an outing, as he's actually has 49 strikeouts currently, but 0.93 WHIP, which is huge. So, Twins have something with Pablo right now, and they got something going with that pitching staff right now.
But like how many years could you have said that about Pablo? He's been quietly great, and like I feel like you could say that for every year he's been a Twin, and like, and that's an interesting Luis Arraez for Pablo Lopez trade, and interested to see like the results of that, because Luis Arraez isn't a Marlin anymore. He's now bounced around the league a little bit, and Pablo's been the tenant of a twi the Twins rotation that has been very solid, and you pair him with Joe Ryan, a great 1-2, and it's less 1 and 2 and more 1 and 1A, and to have that form, have those guys in your bull rotation is able to bring, let Rocco maybe not, and then turn to a great bullpen, and like they don't have to, they obviously would love to go innings, but they don't have to eat certain amount of innings, and can give their best stuff and turn it to a bullpen they can trust to get them the outs and preserve leads and get them wins.
Yeah, and then another guy you mentioned earlier is having a fantastic year for the Twins. Been a great ace, Joe Ryan, and he has been one of those guys on the mound that you see him starting. All right, we're gonna get 5, 6 innings, a good solid ball out of him. He's at 63 strikeouts on the season, so and he's kind of on the brink of being one of them top strikeout guys, but not quite there yet. But hey, he's gonna produce weak contact. He's gonna come out. He's gonna give you 5, 6 good innings, which the Twins, in the past years, especially growing up for us, we were used to, the guys like Phil Hughes and Kyle Gibson, you weren't always guaranteed to get five, six good innings out of those
No.
guys. And man,
Kyle Gibson, though, still in the league, still rocking. We just saw him a couple times last week for the
is
Blue
true.
for the Orioles for in Baltimore, and probably it was definitely on the decline of his career, but it's good to see old familiar friends still in the league.
Yeah.
And you know who else I want to give a special shout? Harrison Bader.
Yes.
He's been very good. He's been a very good acquisition for the Twins this year, and he's given them everything they've needed out of him, and everything they would have possibly wanted out of that acquisition. And like a great defensive outfielder, good hitter, especially at the bottom of the lineup, makes it just that much deeper, and like doesn't give any outs to those rotations. That's just so hard to pitch against.
Another guy that he's currently, a young rising star for the Twins, Brooks Lee.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Which, you could say he's maybe come up, maybe before he's ready right now, but the stats might not tell you that. Hey, he might not be hitting the cover off the ball, but he's going out there. He's giving. Having really good at bats, he's not striking out like early Byron Buxton's the world, and no offense to Byron Buxton, but I mean he's been tough to he's been a tough guy to get out. I mean he's gonna put the ball in play, and I mean he produces great at bats, so I've really been pleased with him. And I know he's been a highly touted prospect coming out of the Twins organization the last few years, so I've been really. I'm really excited for him and his
Yeah,
development.
he's a former Wilmer Stinger, actually,
That's
someone
right. I
we
forgot about
see
that.
near and dear to our hearts. But yeah, and he's able to do it not only from both sides of the plate, just gives you fits as a pitcher, and he's gonna make you get him out, and he's not gonna help you out, and he's gonna grind out at bats, and that's maybe doesn't necessarily show up on the stat sheet, but is just such a big help to other hitters that is able to help them and just help burn up arms and make them throw some of his best pitches. And you could even see it the other game. And he works a great at bat, gets on base, and then is set up for Kiersey, who can like just slap it and brings home the winning run. And just the way he plays is helping his team, helping the Twins win all of these games.
And a couple of maybe unknown guys that have been surprises to me anyways, guys like Cody Clemens,
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Roger Clemens' kids or his son, from what I understand is we picked him up out of free agency this past year, probably thinking he might be a AAA guy, but hey, he's coming to the big league club, made a difference, and he's really been valuable as a role as a guy that can play every other day. And
Yeah, no, he's done great as a twin. He's had two really big home runs, one both in front of his dad, one in his old stomping grounds at Boston, and then he did another one to hit the go-ahead run against Baltimore when we were there. And it's just he's done his role well, and he's another one of those versatile guys that you can plug a lot of different places. And a guy like Willy Castro too, who's been so big for Rocco and allows Rocco to have so much flexibility with his lineup, and now have no worries, like, okay, Willie can go there, Willie can play here, and you have Willie anywhere in your lineup and maybe help ease some of the sting of Buck being out, Correa being out, and having the Willie Castro be valuable in that lineup.
All right. Now that you talked about Rocco a little bit, it's all over social media every time the freaking Twins lose a game. It drives me nuts because baseball, it's a long season. I mean, was it 168 games?
162.
Yeah, 162. Like, is it a make or break season for Rocco? Because I mean, right now, I'm not convinced it is. But you see people after every game, oh, a manager lost that one. Well, manager's gonna have to make decisions. That man, if it works out, if man, you're the freaking greatest of all time, put you in Cooperstown type of thing. But if it falls, get him out of town type of thing. Now, is it a make or break season for Rocco?
No, Yes and no. Like, definitely the way we ended the season last year and started the season this year, I wouldn't have been surprised if Rocco got fired. But now the team's turned it around. Like, if they can get back to that, if they can stay consistently 500 for the rest of the season, I don't think it's going to be too make or break. The only thing I could see Rocco being undone by is the bottom falls out again. Like, and now it becomes like, all right, what is eventually somebody's going to have to be the common denominator, and who's it going to be? And it might be Rocco, we'll see, but I don't know. Like, they're still a good ball club, and I don't see the bottom falling out here. And they still look like a good playoff team, and hopefully they can be in the playoffs. And obviously, if we do make it to the playoffs, Rocco's getting back next year, and hopefully building on this year's success to build, keep building with this young core that we do have.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of said everything I had in my mind there with him is, a big reason, he was under fire, a lot of people could say, because the way we ended last year and started this year. But for us to be playing the way we are now, and I don't, if we were to stay consistent like this throughout the rest of the year, I don't see any reason in the world you let him go. I mean, yeah, do I get frustrated with him at times with his analytics and crap like that? I mean, yes. But, and he's getting his guys to play. He's Guys are playing hard, especially with all the injuries of as of recently that we already talked about. So, I don't really see any reason if we stay consistent this year. I don't see any reason for him to get, the boot.
Yeah, no, I think last year would have been the more make or break, the more fireable season. And yeah, I don't see too many ways he gets fired this year. And to the people saying the baseball, all the moves are, that's just the way baseball is today. And they're paying people a lot of money to tell them what the numbers say, and like, this is what the numbers say, and like, the more you face a pitcher, the better off they'll be. So you better get the pitchers out earlier and just kind of keep cycling through some of the arms that you do have and that you think they'll give you a better shot to win. And he's just, I appreciate he's trusting the numbers, and sometimes it doesn't work. And that's just life sometimes, and that's how it's going to go.
It would be interesting to talk with somebody that, perhaps in lower levels of professional baseball or even college, where they use analytics and see, are they having the same amount of success they were maybe having before, analytics were involved. It'd be interesting to talk to someone like about that stuff here.
Oh, yeah, for sure. It's how analytics have not only changed Major League Baseball, but all the levels down below that.
Yeah, so I actually have a little bit of a story regarding, these analytics and all that. A good buddy of ours, Luke Reuter, he was playing baseball at Southwest State down in Winona a few weeks ago here, and I swung over and watched him. I watched him sit on the bench a couple games. No offense to Luke, he's a great ball player, but
I had a similar experience when Luke came to Des Moines.
it really seemed that the Southwest State coach, Jeremy Ish, I'm not really sure how you say it, but it really seemed he was focused on analytics that game. And for me, it's just interesting, all the how technology comes into baseball now, I guess. Those games, Winona State had a guy hit two home runs, one of them ended up being a walk-off, and it was an absolute cock shot. And, in that situation, he played against analytics. Analytics probably tells you, walk this guy, bottom of the ninth type of thing. Well, their pitcher hung a breaking ball, and it got hit so far. I don't think that ball landed yet. So it was and even Reuter admitted it. There was no way that ball was coming back. Breeze coming in from left field, and that ball left by plenty.
Yeah, and I think some every once in a while that's a flaw in it. Like, your guys just don't perform. Like, the coach obviously, like, know what, I trust my guy, but he wasn't expecting a meatball curveball over the plate to get to the guy, and he probably knew, like, if that were to happen, that ball's not coming back and the game's over. And like, sometimes you just gotta trust your guys and like hope they can execute, and that's not necessarily on the coach. The guy just didn't execute.
Right, and I mean, It was interesting too because they were trying to go off speed with him. This Southwest State pitcher, he has a good fastball, but they were trying to get out of his where he's hot. This Winona hitter, he likes hitting the fastball. Well, what do you do when a hitter likes hitting the fastball? Hey, you pound him with breaking stuff. Well, getting behind 2-0, and you end up throwing a meatball, breaking ball down the middle, and like you say, sometimes your players just don't perform.
And you know what, that happens, and so you got to live and die by the analytic. You can't just say, well, this is what the numbers told me to do, and like nobody's going to believe that, and you just got to live and die by it. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, and that's why we love sports.
All right. Should we get a little NFL involved here?
Yeah, I might as well. It's what people want to see.
All right. All right. We're not going to talk about, all the draft BS, and we could make a whole episode on talking about draft, to be honest, but
Yeah. Mel Kiper, I think Mel Kiper's still throwing a fit about Shador not getting picked till the fifth round.
No, I will talk about that a little bit. Mel Kiper, dude, come on. You talked about freaking Shadur Sanders more than freaking anyone ever. You didn't even really talk about Deron Williams, the freaking number one overall pick, which I thought he was clear number one overall pick, I'll be honest.
Yeah, no, I think he has these quarterbacks he gets enamored by. Jimmy Clausen is probably the most famous example.
Yes.
He
What
bet his career on Jimmy Clausen.
Yeah, I'm still
He's
waiting.
yet to collect on that, but
Yeah,
I don't know. He's been doing
I'm
this for a
still waiting
while.
for
He's
the.
bound to. He's been doing this forever, and he's bound to miss on a few guys. He's hit on a lot of guys, and everybody loves to see him, love him, think he's right, think he's wrong. You're gonna watch and. That for the reasons that we just saw, and it is what it is, and if he's still making the check, we're still gonna see him. But I don't know. I did want to talk about this Viking schedule. It came out a few days ago, and honestly, like we knew who the opponents were gonna be since January and where who we were gonna get on the road, who we were gonna get at home, and honestly, I don't think it shaked out that bad for the Vikings.
No, I don't disagree with you there at all. I see a favorable schedule in ways, and also, I mean, having to go to Seattle, I feel like we play freaking Seattle every time we play Seattle.
But yeah, we even played there last year. We played there last year. Like I, yeah, it always felt like we were going to Seattle somehow. I don't know how they never played in Minnesota. Like it's just sometimes that happens, and that's the way the schedule shakes out. Because we got Chicago Monday night at Chicago Week One Monday Night Football. Got to
That
get
will be
that Soldier Field game out of the way right away. You don't want to go there mid-December.
right.
Get that out of the way right away.
That'll be an interesting game in a lot of reasons. Caleb Williams, sophomore year in the NFL. We'll see if he's made the proper adjustments. I know there's been a lot coming out about him recently about how during the draft process, how he was I need to go to the Vikings type of thing. Well,
Yeah, I mean, can you blame him though? Do you really want to go to Chicago,
I mean, I don't
especially
mean.
without like a good
I don't.
offensive mind in mind? Now, it will be. I'd love to see how he and Ben Johnson work well together because that
Right.
was a big move in the offseason. Ben Johnson took that job, the head job at Chicago, and I'm sure Caleb Williams was a big reason why he wanted that job and. To have a lot of those offensive weapons in place. No, Caleb and Jared Goff, two very different styles of quarterback.
Yes.
Be interested to see how well that works, and I'm sure Ben will be able to adjust his system a little bit. Caleb will adjust his play, and we'll see like a good happy medium in Chicago.
It'll be interesting to see because I don't feel like the Bears made a big splash in free agency this year. Obviously in the draft they went out and got Luther Burden, who's I thought maybe fell a little bit in the draft, but he's a very quality player.
Freak at another one of those SEC freak athlete receivers, and good to pair with him in Chicago. And we'll see how well they go and how well they gel this year. And then the week after that, we host Atlanta. Kirk Cousins still on the roster, not going to start though, probably.
I think it's the Michael Penix show they down in
Like,
Atlanta now, I he you know he had kind of had his freshman season in the NFL where played a little bit at the end. Kirk, I think Kirk's about ready to, I think Kirk should be hanging it up here, but I think the Atlanta's given him, Michael Penix, the keys to the car, and this is his show now.
Yeah, for sure. I think, yeah, no, I think it's got to be the Michael Penix show. Kirk just couldn't do it. Penix showed flashes, at least abilities of being able to do it. You saw what he could do at Washington that year. And no, he was really good. And I think it should be the Michael Penix show. It probably will be the Michael Penix show. And we'll see what happens next year once Kirk's cap hit goes down significantly. If he's shown the door, it'll be interested if the reception he gets from Minnesota after that, especially since he won't be starting. But I don't know. I think a lot of Minnesota fans were happy with the results last year without Kirk, so I don't think there'll be too much hostility towards him.
Right. Then we go to game three. This will be a very good matchup. Thankfully, we have back to back home games here with Cincinnati coming in town. Joe
Yeah.
Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase going up against what we're thinking is going to be JJ McCarthy versus Justin Jefferson. This is going to be a must-see TV, two very explosive offenses. This is going to be a fun game to watch.
Oh, for sure. And now we'll see if the trends of the last few seasons, especially those Zach Taylor Bengal teams, they don't start winning till like week three, week four, end of the season. They start out cold, and we'll be interested to see like if that trend continues this year and they can try to turn around against this Minnesota team and the LSU connection, not only on the Bengals, but also with Justin Jefferson, the see how good of an offense he is, and I'm excited to see that JJ to JJ connection, how well that works this year.
Yeah, and the Vikings have actually, I believe this is the first time in NFL history, the Vikings will be playing back-to-back games overseas. I believe the one's in London, the other is in Germany, I believe.
No, yeah, so we got Pittsburgh in Dublin.
Yeah, Dublin, Ireland,
This
yeah.
will for sure be the first one with two different cities because they have to go to Dublin against the Steelers. I know the Rooneys and the Steelers were big pounders, big proponents of playing in Dublin. That was their connection. They were very big advocates for that, and good to see they've got their wish to play a game. And it'll be very cool to see the Vikings head overseas to play that game, and should be a good one and give the European fans what they want.
Yeah, I haven't looked too much into the Steelers as of now. I know there was some buzz about them potentially signing Aaron Rodgers. I'm not sure what Rodgers is going to end up doing, but
Right.
so I mean, one thing you can always count on with Mike Tomlin though is his guys are going to be ready to play.
Yeah, no, it's the standard is the standard, and they do not care what anybody else has to say about them. They will do that. They will be ready to play, and they will be giving you their best effort for it. And then they travel across to England next week, and they got the Browns, and that's a dumpster fire. It's they just have so much going on. They drafted two quarterbacks this year.
Back-to-back rounds.
Drafted Dylan Gabriel, then took Shedeur Sanders. Still have Deshaun Watson on the roster. And
And Joe
before
Flacco.
and Joe Flacco, and then before the draft, they trade for Kenny Pickett. So they just the our old friend Stefanski is just trying to th he's just gonna throw as many quarterbacks into the wall. One of them's got to be good, right? You would
Right.
think you would. They just got a lot going on, and I'm going to talk about them a little later on. And I just, yeah, it's what, yeah, I don't know what Cleveland's doing.
I loved Stefanski as an OC. I thought he was freaking awesome. I mean, even before him, Pat Shurmur, I thought he'd be a great head coach, just like Stefanski. Not really seeing it. Now it's not. I mean, Cleveland's already a tough place to build a championship culture, but I don't know what's tough in Cleveland.
Yeah, no, it's yeah, they're eventually gonna have to get rid of the Watson albatross and like wait that out, and I don't know if they're just punting until that is over, and like who knows if Watson's even healthy. He's still coming off that Achilles injury, and they're gonna who knows if they're gonna come out and be any they're not gonna be any good. And they at least are gonna start rebuilding. They traded back from two this year to got an extra they got a pretty good haul to move out of two to five, which isn't that big of a gap, but well, the number two pick is Travis Hunter. We'll see in a few years if they got two if they didn't get enough.
And the Vikings have, will probably be a much needed bye week for a tough stretch in there. But everyone says the bye week usually comes at a great time. Well, it couldn't come at a bigger time, especially it being an early bye week this year.
Yeah, and this
And 'cause you're getting into a tough 4 or 5 game stretch there. So.
And another advantage of playing back-to-back weeks in Europe, you push that bye week back another week. Week six is such a better bye than week five. Week six is like we're gonna tee it up here, but yeah, no, this is gonna be a rough stretch for the Vikings and physical stretch, and hopefully they'll be well rested for Philadelphia
Philly's
coming to
coming
town.
down. This is gonna be a big matchup. This is, I'm assuming gonna be a game of the week type of thing. Kickoff might get moved back, but
Yeah,
this
if
this
you
is.
look at where the Viking schedule is leading up to this point, this game might see a combined one to two losses between the two teams. And no, this will be a really good one. And I'm glad this is one of the weeks we got to buy because Philly's going to pound you. They're going to beat you. They're going to wear you down. There's a reason they won the Super Bowl. They got Saquon Barkley, still one of the best lines in football. And they like to run it. They'll run it with Jalen Hurts, even. And just hard-nosed football team, and those one of those weeks you're glad you had a bye before it.
And you're also glad you're not playing in Philadelphia as well.
No.
That place is an extremely tough place to play. I don't care what part of the season it is, that Philadelphia's a tough place to play at. Being able to have that game at home, it's gonna be huge.
Yeah, no, exact for sure.
But
Then we go to the Chargers the next week on Thursday Night Football.
a short week, this is gonna be a tough one.
Yeah.
The Vikings don't ever really seem to have success on Thursday night football to begin with. And going to Atlanta, switching time zones again for this game.
Yeah, I think.
The Vikings always seem to struggle in LA. It's a recipe for disaster, I feel like.
No, I feel like this might follow a similar script of what we saw this year. Play the Lions, physical team, hard-nosed team, play them on a Sunday. Travel out to SoFi Stadium on a Thursday. We obviously lost that one too, and it's like hopefully history doesn't repeat itself, but we've seen similar situations, and like that's just tough draw. Like sometimes that's how it's gonna happen with the schedule.
Yeah, then the very next week doesn't get a whole lot easier. I mean, at Detroit, this is gonna be a tough game. Dan Campbell, they're always ready to play. He's always got a trick up his sleeve, and having those few extra days are gonna be nice, but we're gonna have to be ready to go. Ford Field's a tough place to play.
Yeah, I feel like you could just copy my and paste my notes from the Philadelphia game and they'd be just aptly put here. You get a few extra days rest for another physical football team, but still they're a good team. It's tough losing both coordinators like they did and a couple of position coaches, but I'm sure a lot of the talent's still there and I expect them to still be a formidable opponent for many years to come. And they have a really good core, and it's how insane how fast they were to rebuild. Because most of before better part of my life, they were a laughing stock, and now they are one of the best teams in the NFL, and it's only a matter of time before they see true success.
Well, it's the next week. It doesn't get a whole lot easier if you're a Vikings fan. Unfortunately for us, it helps this game's home, but you got to host Lamar Jackson and the Baltimore Ravens. I forgot to include Derrick Henry as well.
Yeah, no, it's
this is.
or yeah, it's not only have you been facing a tough stretch of football teams,
It just
good
gets
football
tougher.
teams, you got running football teams. You got you know what Philadelphia wants to do? You got a Jim Harbaugh led football team, they want to run the ball.
You know
Detroit
what
doesn't want
Detroit
to run
wants
the
to
ball.
do.
Yeah, and Baltimore is just like gonna pound you, and it's like it's gonna be tough. Like, yeah, no, that's a very physical stretch. Now, I would have liked a few of those games, maybe a little more stretched out, but you know what? You got a bye week in there, you got another mini bye in there, so it's some ability to recoup the body during the stretch. But no, Lamar Jackson, he's the most one of if not the most skilled guy in the NFL, and it's just so unique having to go against him. And there's a reason he has such a good record against the NFC, and his skill set is just so unique, and he's the modern day Mike Vick, and he might even be better than Mike Vick. And no, it's just
Throwing the fact that he's got a guy that is almost impossible to tackle in the open field and Derrick Henry. Oh my, this is
poor
gonna.
Matt. Well, yeah, no, they like to pound the rock, and they are proud of their identity, and they're gonna make you stop them, and not too many teams can. And yeah, no, it's that's a very tough matchup, especially with this stretch that they've gone through to get to this point. No, and yeah, no, a very, very powerful football team here.
Yeah, the next week we are home once again, taking on the Bears from Chicago. I don't have a whole lot to say on this matchup. I mean, you'd assume Caleb Williams is going to continue to improve throughout the sophomore season, but I mean, unless he really sets it on fire, I mean, I see the Vikings taking this one unless we're really banged up here. I mean.
No, and hopefully, Chicago's not nearly as powerful or willing to run as any of the four teams that we previously listed. So that will be very helpful, and like hopefully let them recoup. Like obviously, we're probably going to be a little banged up. Everybody is, especially with that stretch. But a little more air offense here out of the Bears than we've seen, and they're going to see the last few weeks, and hopefully. Hopefully that allows them to match up a little bit better.
Yeah, all right. And then next week, we are going to Lambeau Field. This is going to be, I mean, as always, Vikings Packers, always a big game, no matter the circumstances. But, I will say, not playing at the end of December this year, unlike many years in Lambeau, I'll accept this one, middle of the season at Lambeau. I mean, Jordan Love, hopefully he's not setting the world on fire. I mean, he's an NFL quarterback for a reason. But this is gonna be a tough matchup, and Lambeau is always tough to play. The rivalry, everything about this game is tough. But we'll just have to wait and see. Jaire Alexander can only cover one guy,
And barely, and usually it's with another guy on Justin Jefferson.
Right.
But no, this is about the latest you want to play at Lambeau Field. Once November turns to December, they just find a way to hit that switch, and it becomes a lot harder to beat them there. And this is about the time Jordan Love's been able to turn it on every year, and he'll be very much at that right in the meat of the stretch. And like that's Jordan Love's proven once he's on his game, he is a elite quarterback in this league, and he is an NFL quarterback. So we'll see which Jordan Love we will get this week, that week, and hopefully the Vikings get a lesser version than we've seen. And obviously it's the Vikings Packers game, so it's going to be intense, and everybody's going to have a little fun doing it.
Yeah, and we'd be hopping into at Seattle next week. I can't remember the last time Seattle came to Minnesota.
Yeah, we were talking about this earlier. It's like we were growing up, it always felt like somehow we always played at Seattle. I don't know how it worked. We've had some bad memories there. We had the one we were, I remember the game, we were, they were driving going into, Seattle was driving going into halftime. Russell Wilson tried to make something out of nothing. He threw it up in the air. It went straight into Eric Kendricks, and he was the lead runner, and he had to dive to catch it. Couldn't take it back for six. And yeah, that was a brutal part. And then Vikings have it 4th and 1, ready to ice the game. Get stuffed. We're unable to ice it. Seattle drives down, takes the lead, and ends up winning the game. And it's just those are just kind of the things that happen at Lumen Field.
I feel a bit better about this year just because Sam Darnold goes in there last year and freaking shocks the Seattle Seahawks fan base. And it's shocking me as a Vikings fan. but
Was that his best throw of the year?
that might have been the best throw of his entire career.
Yeah, no, that was an absolute dime to Jefferson to take the lead, and he had a bum ankle at that point, was able to do, yeah, when everybody was still high on Sam Darnold and he was about to get a $200 million contract. And the season kind of unfurled, but no, it was still a heck of a ride, and I appreciate everything Sam did. And that's going to be a rematch with Darnold as he signed with the Seahawks this offseason.
All right. Well, next week we got a home game. The Commanders are making their way from DC. This will be an interesting one. A lot like, the Ravens with the running quarterback and Jaden Daniels, younger version, obviously. But this is going to be a fun game.
Oh,
This could be very entertaining.
yeah, for sure. And what about the job Dan Quinn did last year for those Commanders? I felt like that was a pretty panned hire because of what Dan Quinn accomplished or didn't accomplish in Atlanta, and everybody saw that defense he put on, especially when Jordan Love torched it. But no, he did an exceptional job, got him all the way to the NFC Championship game, and I Cliff Kingsbury and Jane Daniels will, you got to assume, take that next step this year, and it'll be good to see what that comes to in Minnesota, and hopefully Minnesota can contain them.
Yeah, the next week we had another tough one going to Dallas, Sunday Night Football. It seems we always play Dallas Sunday Night Football, especially in Dallas, down in Jerry World. This is gonna be a tough game. Say what you want. Cowboys might not be. I haven't looked too much into the Cowboys' schedule. They might not be lighting the world on fire, but they're gonna be ready to play Sunday Night Football in Dallas. They're gonna be ready to go.
Yeah, for sure. And they are still a pretty good football team. Obviously, didn't get the results last year they were looking for, but yeah, no, they're still a good football team, very formidable. And yeah, especially in Jerry's World, you're going to get all of the Cowboys fans and Lakers fans and Yankees fans, but they get excited for the Cowboys and the win.
Yeah, and the next week we are at the New York Giants. You could say, I can't even think of that stadium's name anymore.
MetLife.
MetLife, you could say it's a tough place to play, but with the Giants in town, I don't know about that, man. I mean, it's been
I
pretty
mean,
rough there the last few years. It doesn't seem to get a whole lot easier, or it doesn't seem like they're going to be a whole lot better this year. I don't know.
no, it's
They have a tough
neither
schedule.
team that plays there is all that good. It's a tough place to play for the two home teams, apparently. And like, yeah, no, they're not good. And we could see this being a lay down and die team by the time we've reached this point. The game temp's going to be cold. They don't want to be there. Hopefully, the Vikings can get out an easy win because they're going to have a short week there right afterwards. And hopefully, we only have to play three quarters. Hopefully, we got a surrendered Giants team as we move on to Christmas Day and the Lions.
This would be a fun, and obviously, based off of last year, two very good teams, but Christmas Day on the Lions, this is gonna be a fun matchup. The 3:30 p.m., prime or mid-afternoon game. Man, it's gonna be heavyweight battle. Like we said earlier, there's two teams that are really gonna get after it.
Hopefully this is, it's probably going to be major division slash playoff implications for this one at the nation watching, everybody on Netflix. Yeah, no, it's going to be a big one, and it's going to be interesting to see how the teams respond on that short week. And because last year it was Saturday to Wednesday, and you can that affected them. Hopefully it's a little easier the Sunday to Thursday, which a few teams have done before. The Lions do it every year, play on Thanksgiving, and they have to play on Thursday Night Football, and that'll be a war of attrition for that one.
I mean, one thing that I do think it gives Vikings a slight advantage in this matchup is, I mean, obviously we're at home, but Lions play a really tough schedule this coming season. And
Yeah, for sure.
So, end of the year at Minnesota. Minnesota's never a tough place to play, or never an easy place to play. My mistake. But
Yeah, and then they end the, because then the their Sunday matchup before the Vikings is the Steelers, and I don't know about you, but I'd ra much rather play the Giants than the Steelers before a short week. And then they go play the Bears week 18, but then after the Vikings get done with the Lions, they get a nice little mini bye in week 18 against the Packers in another game we can assume will have division and or playoff implications.
I found this interesting. It being a flex game, the NFL hasn't decided whether we're going to play this game on, I guess, what would either be a Sunday
Yeah.
or Saturday. I can't.
Yeah, it'd be a Sunday and, or a Saturday game. And I don't know if I were the Vikings, like if you can make it a shorter week for the Packers, you maybe lose it by game, by day, but still you still get a couple extra days than the Packers. So either way, it would still be an advantage for the Vikings, especially at home. Maybe shorten that week up for the Packers. We'll see what happens and how marquee of in a game it will be.
Then now that we kind of wrapped up the Vikings schedule here, are there any other teams that you really thought could be losers of the schedule release or even winners?
The biggest loser I thought was the Browns. Their season will be over before their bye week starts. Cincinnati at home, then they go to Baltimore, then they got Green Bay at home, then they got to go to Detroit. Then they got to go to London to play a team that's been there already for a week in the Vikings. Then they come back, don't have a bye week, play at Pittsburgh, then go to Miami, and then have Miami at home, then go to New England. They might only get one, maybe two wins before their bye week, and their season's over at that point then. And yeah, no, it's just that's a juggernaut schedule right there.
The second half of that, the second half's tough as well. I'm sorry, Brown fans. I don't see it happening this year,
No,
guys.
their season's just over before it starts even. And like the team I thought did really well for this schedule was the Bills. I really like their schedule. They have Baltimore at home the first week of the year, and they probably can make it to their bye week undefeated if they can get past Baltimore. They got to go to the Jets. They get Miami at home. They don't got to go to Miami when it's 105 degrees, scorching hot. Saints, Patriots, and Atlanta. At Atlanta, and then at Carolina before they play Kansas City at home. That's a pretty good schedule, and like they play two, three really good teams. They got Baltimore, Kansas City, and Philly. They play Baltimore to start the year. Got Kansas City, week 9, right in the middle there, and then they play Philadelphia week 17. You got those perfectly spread out. You don't have to have a juggernaut stretch like some other teams do. And no, you got like a great spacing out, and you can rise to some games because that's going to happen. You're going to rise to some and can't keep that intensity every single week. We've seen that in the NFL, and that's really to the advantage of the Bills.
Then another team I really found interesting, 49ers. Christian McCaffrey's back, Brock Purdy, you just signed him to a great deal for your franchise. Their schedule, at Seattle week one, not playing there late in the year, which is huge. At New Orleans, I don't really see how they lose that game, to be completely honest, because I think it's just a dumpster fire down there right now. Home versus Arizona, home versus Jacksonville. I see a 4-0 start, to be honest. And I think the 49ers are just too talented to not start out 4-0 there. And I just see them rolling. At LA, gonna be a tough game as always. At Tampa, I don't see them losing there. Home versus Atlanta, they ain't losing that. At Houston, nah, they ain't losing that. At New York, consider that a bye week, essentially. I'm just kidding. I mean, they ain't losing there. Home versus LA, tough game. They ain't losing. I mean, they got a favorable schedule. They got a lot of talent. This could be a good year for the 49ers.
One thing that might do them is with something we said with the Timberwolves, all these time zones from the Los An they get have to play at Los Angeles Pacific time zone. Atlanta, Eastern time zone, Pacific time zone, Central time zone, East time zone, Pacific time zone, Mountain time zone, Pacific time zone, Eastern time zone, back to the Western time zone, back to the Central time zone. No, back to Eastern time zone, back to Central. They just don't play any games where they can have similar sleep schedules. No, they do get a Mountain time zone in there, which is really similar, and a bye week. But
Oh,
yeah, that's just,
late in the year, I find that interesting.
yeah, no, it's just, that's got to be tough way to end the season. It's like you can never, it's got to be tough feeling like you can never keep a consistent schedule. Any other losers that you thought in this scheduling?
Let's see. Lions, honestly. I'm kind of surprised to say that, but starting at Green Bay and home versus Chicago, which is nice, but you're going to at Baltimore, your home versus Cleveland, at Cincinnati, and at Cincinnati, and then very next week you're at Kansas City. That's a pretty tough stretch there, if I will say myself. Aiden Hutchinson, from what I've seen, is he does not look like he has the explosiveness he had before. Unfortunately for the guy, I'm a big fan of his, the way he plays, but coming off that knee injury, I'm not sure if he's gonna have that same explosiveness that he once had, which made him so effective rushing the quarterback. And it's gonna be a tough schedule, especially down the stretch here. I mean, they have a nice bye week, week eight, but following that bye week, I mean, you're home versus Minnesota, which would be nice, but you're at Washington and at Philadelphia. Two very good East teams, and
No, yeah, it's
then you
even up in like
you
fourth.
got to
They got their tough part of the schedule more towards that middle to give their new coordinators a couple of weeks. Like obviously, Baltimore is probably their toughest game early in the season at week three, and they can maybe ramp it up a little bit, but they don't got exactly slouches in that early part of the week, and be interested to see how those coordinators adjusted. And do you have any others?
I mean, they finished at that. They end of the year. That's a tough finish for them. You're at LA. You're home versus Pittsburgh, which is nice. But then you're at Minnesota and at Chicago, two very tough places to play. Minnesota, as we already said, expected to be a high meaning game when it comes to playoffs and stuff like that. Going to Soldier Field in December, or I guess it'd be January.
Cold
That's
weather
a
Goff. Can't trust it, but yeah, and like I'm sure they'd rather play at Chicago week two than week 18, but
banger.
just how the schedule goes, but it is what it is, and they'll if they want to do what they want to do, they'll be able to win in the cold. And as we wrap up this episode, I think we wanted to share our favorite highlight of the week, and it actually comes from the golf world. And then Dalton, I think that's the most you've related to a professional golfer ever.
I could confirm that.
For those of you that didn't see him this weekend in Quail Hollow at the PGA Championship, Wyndham Clark was dissatisfied with one of the drives he hit, and he took it out on his driver, and he threw it, and
Had
he
some
broke
anger
his
in this
sign and almost hit a hole
swing.
in tears. And it's just like, hey, I do that. It's good to see other people who are actually really good at golf freak out over the game of golf and just kind of laugh and like be able to laugh at it because nobody was hurt, fortunately. It could have ended badly, and I'm sure Wyndham regrets doing it, and hopefully he doesn't do it again, I guess. Like, hopefully he doesn't hurt anybody
But on
more
the
than
bright side, before this moment, nobody probably had knew of him. Now,
that. Nah. Yeah, I probably became a more well-known name because of this. And Dalton, guy rose this morning, and Scottie Scheffler won another golf tournament, and he best golfer in the world and probably the most dominant since Tiger. He's just good. He's just great at the game of golf.
Oh, yeah. So, did Scotty win the freaking Masters too?
No, Rory finally won his first Masters.
Oh.
Finally completed the career Grand Slam. But
Scotty was right
Scottie
there.
just came off one of the most dominating performances at the The Byron Cup here recently shot the lowest, tied the lowest round ever on a PGA, tied the lowest tournament score ever on the PGA Tour.
We're talking about golf here. We want to give a special shout out to a childhood friend of ours, Peyton Corrin, actually. Currently golfer down at Winona State University, where I attend school as well. Him and I don't see each other a whole lot just because, well, we're taking different classes. He's in those smart ones. I'm in the others. I'm just kidding. But he's like an engineering or something like that. I'm in a college education, so two completely different things. But he recently actually had a qualifying round for the U.S. Open, which is very impressive considering he's just a small town Minnesota kid. He growing up, we actually thought he was probably the best baseball player out of all of us. Dude could freaking throw. Dude could pitch.
No, he was a really good baseball player, really good golfer. Was on the golf team with him. He was a lot better than me, obviously. Yeah, he recently medaled the local qualifier at Wingsun Golf Course in Minnesota, was able to advance to final qualifying, the 36 round event, 36 hole event. And if he does well enough in that, he'll be able to qualify for the US Open, and that would be obviously a really big deal for him and everybody who supports him and has been there with him for the entire journey.
Yeah, also shout out to them. Winona played at the conference tournament a few weeks ago, and he day three he led the Warriors, so that was pretty impressive for him with best score. Winona's actually been having some really successful transfers as of recently. Guys that start here and transfer to a Division One school, Peyton could be next. So really exciting to see out of someone that we grew up with and. So shout out Peyton. Maybe we'll have him on as a special guest here sometime soon. If anyone listening wants to be a special guest, hey, give us a holler. We'll come on here and talk sports with you. We'll BS with you. But you got anything else to add today?
I think this is how we wrap up tonight's episode.
All right. Shout out to everyone still listening here. We appreciate you. We will see you guys next week on another episode of Snow Day Sports. I'm Dalton Barrett.
And I'm Max Linden.
Good night, everybody.